All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Mary J. Scholin presiding. All other business before this court draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I'm Judge Scholin. To my right is Judge Peach. To my left is Judge Greenberg. We're here today in the matter of Jack Sukic against David J. Shulkin, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 13-0158. Counsel, will you please note your appearance for the record? Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Michelle Katina. I represent the secretary in this action, and sitting with me at council table is James Cowan, Deputy General Counsel.
Thank you. Are both parties ready to proceed? Each side will have 30 minutes to present argument. Mr. Carpenter, would you like to reserve time for rebuttal?
Yes.
Okay, we will set aside 10 minutes. Preliminarily, pending before the court are two motions by Mr. Sukic's adult children, Anthony Sukic, Alexandria Lynn, and Jack Alexander Sukic. With regard to Miss Alexandria Lynn Westfall or Daigle, well, how should the court refer to her, please? Would you like to supplement?
I actually can't remember which one is the correct name, Your Honor. I'll inform the court.
Thank you. The other pending motion is to substitute as the appellants in this appeal. We understand that the Secretary has accepted the motion to substitute filed at the RO as an accrued benefits claim. Is that correct? Thank you. Okay, then the issues regarding Reeves are no longer in question and need not be addressed. Mr. Carpenter, you may proceed.
May it please the Court. Under this Court's rule, this court permits an appropriate person to be substituted in appeal upon the death of an appellant. The adult children assert that they are appropriate persons under this court's rule. However, that is not the end of the matter. In order to determine, for this court to determine whether or not they are appropriate persons, I believe this court must interpret the language used in both 5121 capital A as well as 5121 small a, since 5121 capital A is dependent upon the language in 5121 small a. Therefore, the question before this court is whether or not Mr. Sukic's adult children are qualified survivors for substitution under 38 U.S.C. 5121 capital A. The answer to that question turns on an interpretation of the meaning of the term children. Not the term child, but the term children, as used by Congress in 5121 small a, parens 2, capital B. Congress did not define the term children as used in 5121 small a, 2, capital B. However, when read in context with the three designated groups of qualifying survivors in that statute, it is the position of the adult children of Mr. Sukic that children, the meaning of children is clear, and it only refers to whether or not there is or is not a familial relationship, a parent-child relationship, between the veteran and the persons seeking to be substituted as children.
I'm sorry, I need to clarify for a moment. So you're not arguing that it's that they met the definition at the time the claim was filed?
That was the original basis of our application in our motion, Your Honor. However, in preparing for this argument, I believe that the definition that controls is the plain meaning of the word children as used in the statute, and that for it is broader than the narrow application that was made in our motion for substitution.
Court does not like new arguments on the fly. We've had this discussion before.
Well, this is not a new argument, Your Honor. The question is whether they do or do not qualify. And the question of qualification is whether or not they meet the definition of children as used in the statute. The statute does not define the term children. Congress did define the term child, and defined the term child in 101 parens 4 as child in a dependent status. Also, Congress defined parent in terms in 101. In this statute, in 5121 small a, Congress used the term children, not minor children or dependent children, but in the very next category of qualified survivors, uses the specific qualifier of dependent parents, clearly indicating that the intent of Congress is that in order to qualify for substitution or to qualify for accrued benefits under 5121 small a, that a parent must be dependent. This clearly indicates that Congress chose words that have meaning, and the failure to qualify the term children with the qualifier dependent indicates that Congress had no intent, regardless of the definition of dependency of a child, to require for accrued benefit purposes that children be defined as dependent. And as a result, the adult children of Mr. Tsukik have a statutory right to be recognized as appropriate persons by this court for substitution under this court's rule.
Are you aware of any legislative history that supports that position?
No, Your Honor, not that I could locate. And I am relying, Your Honor, on the plain and ordinary meaning of the term children, as well as the plain and ordinary meaning of the word dependent. And when the word dependent is used to qualify one category of survivors, but not used to qualify the other category of survivors, then the plain and ordinary meaning of the term children should be understood to be the intent of Congress. Yes, Judge.
So this line of argument that you're proposing here about children, what if the statute read 2151 small a read child? Because it says veterans' children, so you're sort of hanging your hat on the idea that there's multiple. But what if it was one child? How do you? Then there is a recognized definition of child.
There is a recognized definition of child, and then the question becomes whether or not that definition was the intended definition to be used by Congress. Congress did not qualify the term child or children with the qualifier dependent. So I would argue that based upon what is now the understood intent of Congress, that persons that qualify as survivors of veterans are entitled to step into the shoes of the deceased veteran and continue their appeal, which is precisely what the adult children of Mr. Tsukik are asking for in this case, is made clear, as this court noted in Breedlove, as a fundamental change from the congressional intent under 5121 small a when written, that the appeal would die with the veteran. And that it may well have been the intent of Congress at the time of writing 5121A to consider that because this was a derivative benefit. Congress has decided that substitution is now allowable and allows for not a derivative claim, but for the original claim to continue, which is precisely the circumstances that we're in Mr. Tsukik's case. Mr. Tsukik's case came before this court, got a decision. That decision was appealed to the Federal Circuit. The Federal Circuit reversed this court's decision, and this court issued an order of remand to follow the instructions of the Federal Circuit. That is the quintessential pending appeal that a qualified survivor is allowed under 5121 capital A to be substituted in, to do two things. First, to complete the appeal so that the appeal does not die with the veteran. That was the effect prior to the enactment of 51, 5121 capital A. With the enactment of 5121 capital A, the congressional intent reversed and said that no longer will an appeal die but with the appellant, but the appeal can continue so long as there are qualifying survivors. And the intent of Congress to do that, as recognized by this court in Breedlove, was to allow for the continuation of that appeal. Because if you don't allow for the continuation of the appeal, then, as this case is a perfect example of, the VA gets the benefit of not only their error, but the money that was due and owing to the veteran at time of death.
But that would be true if the veteran didn't have heirs that are listed under A, B, C. But under ordinarily estate laws, they would have an estate that would then go to whoever they intended. That money is not available intentionally.
Well, Your Honor, I have always understood the law to be that, as you just articulated. However, again, in preparing for this case, I ran up against something that I had not taken particular note of, and that is the next statute in sequence following 5121, which is 5122. And the relevant language in 5122, and that this particular statute deals with a check that was made prior to the death. The very last sentence says that any amount not paid in the manner provided for in Section 5121 of this title shall be paid to the estate of the deceased payee unless the estate will cheat.
Right, but now, that's the 1 month, not an accrued benefits.
I understand that. But the assumption has always been read into 5121 that if there are non-qualifying survivors, that the estate is not considered because they are not specifically named.
Right.
However, estate is specifically contemplated for the payment of monies due and owing for a 1 month period under 5121.
Right. So by not being named in 5121, little a, or not little, A2,
yes, yes, smaller.
That one would assume it does not allow it to go to the estate.
And I'm simply suggesting that I believe that there is now a basis to challenge that on the clearly expressed congressional intent for the payment of benefits that are due and owing to an estate. The question then would become one of statutory interpretation, is whether or not that omission is an expression of the intent of Congress by having been omitted.
Well, let us assume that is the expression of Congress, that they wish to not have these benefits go to the estate. The persons under A, little A to big A and big C, the veteran's spouse and the veteran's dependent parents, are both universally recognized as dependents to the veteran.
I'm not sure that's correct, Your Honor. I
mean, by VA.
Oh, by VA. Yeah, oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yes. So, therefore, it would seem incongruous to Congress's intent to give this benefit to two dependent sectors, the spouse or the parents, but then allow a child of any age or lacking an incapacity to receive these benefits because they are not a dependent. Why would Congress do that?
I think both myself and this court are faced with the conundrum of trying to understand the intent of Congress in writing 5121 small a. I am suggesting that 5121 small a can no longer be read or understood relative to the intent of Congress based upon what the intent of Congress may have been at the time of writing because of the writing of 5121 capital A, because that changed the dynamic. It changed the fundamental understanding of the relationship of the persons identified in 5121 small a as at least what I refer to as the qualified survivors. The qualified survivors are the ones that get to pursue an accrued benefit claim. 5121 capital A is not an accrued benefit claim. An accrued benefit claim is a derivative benefit under 5121 small a. What Congress did was to merely make reference to the persons that qualify under 5121 small a as those persons who will be eligible to be substituted.
I do not understand how the addition of 5121 big A, allowing for substitution by certain individuals listed under 5121 small a, would modify the definition of those people under 5121 small a. You said it changed the relationship. How did it change the relationship? By merely allowing them to continue a claim. They're the same contemplated people.
I'm not sure they are the same contemplated people, because Congress clearly decided that it was no longer public policy that a claim die with a veteran, and that a new claim must be filed. A new claim is the claim that belongs to those persons. The adult children, if allowed to substitute in this case, would not be pursuing their own claim. They would be continuing the pursuit of Mr. Sukik's claim, their father. And the persons identified as the person that qualify to do that are simply the veteran's children. And that veteran's children phrase can certainly be interpreted, as this court suggests, as being dependent. But that interpretation is undermined by the fact that Congress didn't use that term. Now,
would you argue then that for accrued benefits purposes, that the same type of children as in this motion would be eligible under 5121 small a?
I would, Your Honor. And the reason for that is that I do not believe that, or I believe that this court has to look at what the ordinary meaning of the term children is and not look at it in terms of a qualifier as dependent children, because dependent children infers that only those children who are minors or have an incapacity prior or qualify for the educational portion are the persons that would be eligible to step into those shoes. That seems to be a far narrower perspective, particularly if you're talking about persons who are under the old version of the law, if you will, or the prior version of the law, when 5121 capital A did not exist, that would be allowed to bring their own claim. This is not a bringing your own claim action. This is continuing the action in order to both fulfill the pending appeal, to complete that pending appeal, and then have the derivative benefit of the receipt of those benefits distributed to them. The other thing that I would bring to this court's attention is that 5121A, is, in at least in my view, very difficult to understand. It's read in, or written in a very cryptic way, in which small a parens 1 describes the persons who can receive that upon death, and then refers to it in parens 2 as the list of those persons. But it really doesn't say, as has been extrapolated, that these are the persons who will bring the action. It simply says those are the persons to whom those benefits will be distributed to. And in that order, and with the priority. So if the spouse is alive, then the veteran's children cannot be substituted, cannot receive those accrued benefits. Only if the spouse is deceased can the veteran's children do that, and the same with the dependent parent.
If your interpretation were to be accepted by this court, would we not be in conflict with our prior decision in Burris, where a 70-something-year-old gentleman was found not eligible because he was not a child? Even though he was indubitably had a relationship of a child with the veteran.
Right. It's clearly, on its face, you would be. But this court is not faced with the question of interpreting 5121 small a as the court was in Burris when there was no 5121 capital A. And as a result, and Burris did not deal with the question of substitution. This case is only about substitution. And it goes back to this court's rule as to what constitutes an appropriate person for purposes of substitution. This court, in my view, needs to address this issue based upon the interpretation of 5121 capital A, as this court did in Breedlove, recognizing that 5121 capital A does not control substitution in this court, but expresses the intent of Congress, and that that intent of Congress has been fundamentally altered from the intent that existed at the time in which Burris was considered by this court. And to the extent that Burris is in conflict, I believe that 5121 capital A would trump.
Now, if this court chooses not to undertake an analysis of this argument that you've presented here for the first time, you have 40 seconds. Would you like to argue anything about the arguments you did make in your motion?
The argument that was made in the motion is the same argument, Your Honor. It simply modifies the argument that I have expanded upon today to address the fact that this court should recognize, if they reject the broader argument, that when a child is a minor and the period of time for the benefits is at issue, then that qualification should trigger the application of both 5121 small a and 5121 capital A.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Just a moment, please. Ms. Katina, first I'd like to offer VA the opportunity to file a supplemental briefing responding to the appellant's last-minute argument, if you would like to take that, because I feel like this is a novel issue that he's presented.
It is a novel issue, Your Honor, but I don't think that the...
You don't have to answer it now.
Okay.
You've been given an opportunity. Why don't you consider it and see how things go?
Okay.
But full speed ahead on whatever argument you were going to make.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The plain language of both 38 U.S.C. 5121 subsection A and 5121 big A make clear that Congress issued an unqualified directive that accrued benefits may be paid only to certain categories of persons, and that the question of eligibility for either accrued benefits or for substitution in a claim pending before the agency is to be fixed upon the death of the veteran. Of course, this goes to the arguments that counsel made in his pleadings. It is the Secretary's contention here, the pertinent question as presented in those pleadings was whether the adult children fit within the class of persons expressly limited by Congress in subsection 5121A2 as those eligible for substitution, which are the veteran's spouse, the veteran's children, and the veteran's dependent parents. The Secretary respectfully contends that the question is no. The answer to that question is no. The Court has long held that the meaning of the term child for accrued benefit purposes is defined by statute under 38 U.S.C. 101-4A. The veteran's adult children did not fit within the definition of a child at the time of the veteran's death, and counsel does not contend otherwise. Therefore, whereas here the essential facts are not in dispute, the overarching and determinative issue before the Court, as both parties have contended, can be decided as a matter of law. Because both the statute and the case law are clear that the proposed parties do not fit within the class of persons contemplated under subsection 5121a2, namely dependent family members. The court should reject the proposed party's attempt to create a new category of payee not intended by the express provisions of section 5121 and deny their motion as for substitution as a matter of law. As to appellant's argument, and still even as to the argument he makes here today, it is the Secretary's position that the plain language of the statute, this Court's decision in Burris, and the Federal Circuit's decision in Nova control disposition in this matter. Specifically, in Nova, that Court held eligibility to substitute under 5121 is governed by subsection 5121a, which determines eligibility based on the person's relationship to the veteran at the time of his death. Because the status of a potential substitute is not static, eligibility to substitute can be conclusively determined only at the time of the claimant's death. And the Court continued, while it is possible that the individuals the claimant certifies as his spouse, children, or dependent parents at some point during his lifetime will still occupy that status at the time of the claimant's death, it is not certain that will be the case. Due to divorce, death, or a change in dependency status, the person who appears to be eligible to substitute based on VA records may not, in fact, be eligible. In Morris, while citing to the provisions of subsection 5121A, this Court made clear that no other categories of payee are provided in the statute. In this case, the proposed parties will never meet the statutory requirements of an eligible accrued benefits claimant. While appellant did seem to say that the definition of children should be given its plain meaning, if the introduction of 38 U.S.C. 101 says that its definitions are to be used throughout Title 38. So it is the Secretary's contention that, consistent with Burris, consistent with the Federal Circuit's decision in Nova, and consistent with the plain language of the statute, the adult children of the veteran do not fit within the statutory provisions for eligibility under 5121a2. In Breedlove, the Court emphasized both its statutory mandate under 38 U.S.C. 7266 and, moreover, that it adheres to the jurisdictional case or controversy requirements of Article 3 of the Constitution. A party seeking substitution before the Court must have both standing under Article 3 and be adversely affected by the underlying board decision. Where a determination is made that a movement meets the eligibility requirements of accrued benefits claimant, he or she then has standing and is affected by VA's adjudication on the veteran's claim in the same way the veteran was affected. As the Secretary has stated, because this is limited to certain undisputed facts, it does not present circumstances for the Court to revisit its decision in Breedlove. Because the Court can make a determination that the proposed parties do not fit the definition of a child and are not otherwise eligible for accrued benefits, they do not have the legal authority to stand in the shoes of the veteran. And moreover, as stated, a plain reading of the statute makes clear that Congress issued an unqualified directive that accrued benefits may be paid only to the categories of persons enumerated in subsection 5121A2. Therefore, the Court should deny the motion for substitution as a matter of law.
The appellant is trying to create some sort of modification in the law by the enactment of 5121 Big A, that somehow changes the relationship or changes the type of people who can bring, or our understanding of the type of people that can bring this claim. Do you have any kind of response to that?
5121 Big A makes clear that eligibility to substitute is determined by subsection 5121 little a 2. So it would be the Secretary's position that that enactment of the statute doesn't make any kind of change. And moreover, as I stated, in the Nova case, the Federal Circuit was directly addressing the regulations enacted in accordance with 5121 Big A and recognized the dependency status of the categories of payees.
Had the veteran lived, he would have been able to receive retroactive benefits. Why do you think Congress would have intended for his children to not benefit from this claim despite VA's mistakes or delays?
Well, that ultimate decision whether or not he was entitled to retroactive benefits, Your Honor, was never made. But I think that that's also addressed in the Morris case, where there was actually accrued benefits sitting there for distribution to the veteran, but he died prior to their distribution, and the court made clear that that money cannot be passed on to the veteran's estate, that it only can be passed on to the enumerated payees in 5121 little a subsection 2.
We have nothing further. If you'd like to submit supplemental briefing, please do so within 7 days or file a motion for an extension.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Carpenter.
I'd like to begin with the Secretary's suggestion that 5121 capital A requires that the is dependent upon the person qualifying under 5121 small a. The actual language used by Congress is a living person who is eligible to receive accrued benefits due to the claimant under section 5121A of this title. That is what is described. That forces us to go back to 5121 small a and determine whether or not these now adult children, whether based upon their status as dependent children at the time in which the benefits were accrued in this case, or whether or not as simply the children of Mr. Sukic, are entitled to receive those accrued benefits. The plain language of the statute says that the children, if there is no living spouse, will be or shall be paid those benefits. It doesn't make any qualification on the term children or child as defined in 101.4. It does not say dependent children. And what we're talking about here is whether or not there is a reasonable basis, there is a reasonable reading of this statute in which the intent of 5121 capital A can be carried out.
If VA has defined child, why would you not use that definition? Why would VA have to add a qualification under 5121 little a to big B?
I'm not suggesting that the VA would have to. I'm suggesting that Congress failed to, and Congress's failure to, permits a reading of 5121 small a when it says the children of the veteran.
But if Congress also wrote 101,
yes,
and we understand that a term is interpreted consistently throughout a statute, why would we not interpret it in conjunction with 101?
Because when you read 5121 capital, or excuse me, small a, in its entirety for all three categories, Congress expressly identified parents as being dependent and did not identify children as being dependent.
Right, but if you read 101, it says child. A child is this, a child is that.
Right.
So,
and I would suggest that that is for dependent purposes. And accrued benefits are not dependent benefits. Accrued benefits are to receive the benefits which were due and owing the veteran at the time of the veteran's death. It is a congressional hierarchy, if you will, of those persons who are entitled to receive those benefits. That's the language of 5121 capital A that says the a living person, and these three adult children are three living persons who should be interpreted to be entitled to receive the benefits that are due and owing, granted a term, assuming that they are determined to be due and owing, on remand.
A factual question, please.
Yes.
I note that Mr. Sukic was divorced, I believe, in 1994. Is Mrs. Sukic no longer living?
That is my understanding, but I'm going to have to verify that. I may have this confused with another case, so I don't want to commit for certain, but
okay.
I will corroborate.
Let's
that.
Let's assume for purposes that she is living. Would that change your analysis at all?
Well, if she were living and was divorced, then that would disqualify her because she would no longer be the spouse, or would not have been the spouse, excuse me, at time of death.
Under your current theory? Under your prior theory
that
you were eligible at the time the veteran filed the claim.
Oh, I see.
She would have been the spouse.
That would be true, Your Honor. If under the initial theory, based upon the state or the period of benefits due, then that would be correct. If she were living at the time of death, then yes, I suppose that she would qualify under that theory.
Does that seem
And that would preclude the adult children from doing that.
And does that seem like an absurd result? That a veteran's ex-spouse would get benefits in above the precedence perhaps of dependent children, if we all agreed that there were dependent children at that time?
Well, the hypothetical presupposes that she makes such a claim.
Right.
And then clearly, under the simultaneously contested claim provisions of the law, they would have to determine who is or isn't eligible as competing parties. But this case presents only the circumstance of whether or not when a veteran dies, when the case is pending before this court, are the adult children appropriate persons to be substituted? They can only be appropriate persons, I would submit, if they qualify under 5121 small a.
What if there was a fourth child who was still a dependent?
Again,
would it be appropriate for it to be split evenly amongst the four children?
The way that I read the statute, that is the intent of Congress, that the children should share equally, and that it would not make any difference other than the fact that the status of the minor child would be uncontested in terms of qualifications.
Right.
Or qualifying as a survivor. Unless there's further questions?
You, just to make it clear, you've abandoned your argument that the child, let's see, how did you say that? That at the time of the claim, they were children, they were a child as defined by the statute.
No, Your Honor. I have incorporated that argument into the broader argument that children are not defined in 5121 small a, and that children are any recognized children that are alive at the time of the veteran's death. Has nothing to do with dependency, because Congress did not say dependency. In the alternative, I retain the initial assertion that the court should interpret the term child to include the child's status at the time of the period of accrued benefits at issue.
So how do you reconcile with 101 of 38 U.S.C., which provides all the definitions, and it says for the purpose of this title, 38 U.S.C., these are the definitions, and among the many definitions is the word child, and it's clearly recognized on a dependency basis.
And that's how I distinguish it, Your Honor. The term child, when used in the context of dependency, is to be understood by that definition. I am saying that 5121 small a is not a dependency statute. It is a separate statute for the receipt of accrued benefits, well, money due
and owing.
We would
need a new definition of, we would need a definition of children.
That's correct. As articulated separately in the use of the unqualified term children, when the qualified term dependent parents is used in the succeeding section.
And who should do that, define children, for your purposes?
I believe this court can, based upon the ordinary meaning of the word, that on the basic canons of construction, you start with what the statute says. And the statute does not define the term children. And therefore, you go to the ordinary meaning of the term children when it is used in a non-dependent context. And this is a non-dependent context. In any dependent context, you go back to 101.4.
So what if the statute that we're talking about, the 5121A, read the precedence of the order of priority is, of course, veteran spouse. Number two, it says veteran's children.
Yes.
What if it said veteran's child slash or children?
I don't think it would make any difference because it is referring to a child or children in a non-dependent status.
But yet we have a definition of child.
That is defined only in the context of dependency.
Except for the purposes of Chapter 19. This is not Chapter 19. It doesn't say in order to assess dependency. It just says the term child means.
No. I'm saying that the definition provided is a definition of dependency and that you look at what the definition instructs both this court and the agency in terms of what the term child will mean. When you use the term child, when Congress used the term child, it only used it in the context of dependency as defined in 101.4.
Thank you, Your
Honor.
Thank you.
The case is now submitted. Thank you, counsel. The court will come down and greet.
All rise.
Thank you.